Dan's welcome to Port. By chance, two birds have made a nest together in the same tree. The two birds are friends and are of a similar nature. One of them, however, is eating the fruits of the tree, whereas the other, who does not eat the fruits, is in a superior position due to his potency. The example of two birds in the same tree is given to illustrate the presence within the heart of the material body of both the individual soul and the supersoul, personality of Godhead. Just as a bird makes a nest in a tree, the living entity sits within the heart. The example is appropriate because the bird is always distinct from the tree. Similarly, both the individual soul and the supersoul are distinct entities, separate from the temporary material body. The word balena indicates that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is satisfied by his own internal potency, which consists of eternality, omniscience, and bliss. As indicated by the word bhuyam, or having superior existence, the Supreme Lord is always in a superior position, whereas the living entity is sometimes an illusion and sometimes enlightened. The word balena indicates that the Lord is never in darkness or ignorance, but is always full in his perfect, blissful consciousness. Thus the Lord is nirana, or uninterested in the bitter fruits of material activities, whereas the ordinary conditioned soul busily consumes such bitter fruits, thinking them to be sweet. Ultimately, the fruit of all material endeavor is death, but the living entity foolishly thinks material things will bring him pleasure. The word sakaya, or two friends, is also significant. Our real friend is Lord Krishna, who is situated within our heart. Only he knows our actual needs, and only he can give us real happiness. Lord Krishna is so kind that he patiently sits in the heart, trying to guide the conditioned soul back home, back to Godhead. Certainly no material friend would remain with his foolish companion for millions of years, even if his companion were to ignore him or even curse him. Especially if his companion were to ignore him or even curse him. But Lord Krishna is such a faithful, loving friend that he accompanies even the most demoniac living entity and is also in the heart of the insect, pig, and dog. That is because Lord Krishna is supremely Krishna conscious and sees every living entity as part and parcel of himself. Every living being should give up the bitter fruits of the tree of material existence. One should turn one's face to the Lord within the heart and revive one's eternal loving relationship with one's real friend, Lord Krishna. The word sadrishau, or of similar nature, indicates that both the living entity and the personality of Godhead are conscious entities. As part and parcel of the Lord, we share the Lord's nature but in infinitesimal quantity. Thus the Lord and the living entity are sadrishau. A similar statement is found in the Shvetashvatara Upanishad 4.6. Dva suprana sayuja sakaya samanam vriksham parishash vijate toyoranya pipalam svadyati anayanam anyo vijakshasiti. There are two birds in one tree. One of them is eating the fruit of the tree while the other is witnessing the actions. The witness is the Lord, and the fruit eater is the living entity. Om Agyana Timananda Shaganjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my beloved spiritual master, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Ji Dandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada, who has so kindly come to me, who am deeply in the darkness of ignorance with my eyes closed shut and is forcing them open with this torch light of knowledge. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So Krishna is indeed friend. Suhridam Sarvabhutanam. In Sanskrit language there are three words for friend. There is Suhrit, there is Bhantu, and Mitra. No. So the Suhrit is like the word Hrit, heart, you see. So the Suhrit means very intimate, very deeply, heart to heart, very deep friend. Not casual friend, very, very deep, deep friendship, suhrit. Suhridam sarvabhutanam. So here we get some idea of how friendly actually is Krishna. Just like ourselves, we can consider we have various friends in this world. We have our very close friends in this movement. And we have friends that we also knew before we joined this movement. So, if we were to go to jail, do we have any friend that would come and sit with us? Let's say we were convicted and we had to do 20 years behind bars. And you think of your very best friend in the movement, will he volunteer to come and sit with you, keep you company for 20 years behind bars? Do we have that such friend anywhere? So just consider, what is that great friend, Sri Krishna? How many abominable situations he agrees to participate in, sitting in the heart along with us. The dog, the pig, the insect, so much nonsense. He's sitting there just waiting. When will this living entity come back to me? When will he wake up from his sleeping condition? You see? So this is the great kindness of Krishna. So we have to appreciate, even though we've been so offensive, we've been so ridiculous in so many ways, for so many million, uncountable lifetimes, we've been just ridiculous nonsense. Envious, greedy, lusty, dirty, filthy, vulgar. I mean, you name it, we've been there. There's no words too strong to describe actually how bad we have been. The most disgusting, abominable words are just the tip of the iceberg to describe actually how rotten we have actually been. And Krishna has always kindly endured our various situations. Just to sit there to encourage us, you come back to me, you come back to me, you come back to me. Not forcing. Krishna has the power to force us to do anything. He's God. He can do anything and everything by his unlimited potency. But he does not want to make us into robots. You see. Many people in my e-course are always asking, how is it possible we could leave the spiritual world? Such an ideal situation. How could one possibly leave there? But the fact is that free will always exists for the living being. Because Krishna doesn't want robots. Krishna wants loving association. And love means voluntary, not a gun at the head. Love me or I shoot. Love means voluntary. So that voluntary cooperation with Krishna, that gives him the greatest happiness. And when we leave, he's very much wanting not to lose contact. So he comes as a supersoul and travels with us lifetime after lifetime. Because he wants to reestablish that loving relationship. But he gives us enough rope to hang ourselves also. We're very determined to be independent. He gives us that freedom. It's quite a task for Krishna actually. But he, of course, in his supreme omnipotence, he is able to accomplish. Prabhupada told us in Atlanta that the householder is praying, "My dear Lord, please bless me that my house will not be robbed." And the thief is praying, "My dear Lord, please bless me that I can successfully rob the house." And Prabhupada said, Krishna has just, he said, God is perplexed. He has to satisfy both. So, but somehow Krishna is able to do. He's able to do that. By his supreme omnipotence, inconceivably how Krishna is able to do everything through his energies. Actually, he doesn't personally do all these things. He has his expanded forms, the Vishnus, who carry out all these exterior activities within this exterior or external energy. He's happily situated with Srimati Radharani in Goloka Vrindavan in his eternal pastimes, relishing the sweetest happiness, playing the flute, running around Govardhan having the supreme adventure, supreme personality of Godhead. So Krishna, he is engaged in his eternal activities, and he brings those eternal activities here to this realm from time to time to give us cordial invitation that why are you rotting in this material existence? Why don't you come back? One time we were in the Houston airport, and in the far distance, in the lobby, you could hear some ukuleles going na na and some music, you know, na 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 na. So we looked over there and said, "What is going on here?" And they had some girls in grass skirts, you know, going like this, and they had the guys with the ukuleles going like this, and the, you know, garlands, they call them leis in Hawaii, but they were all decked out in their leis, and it was in front of the Hawaiian Airlines ticket counter. That yes, you come to Hawaii and enjoy. So Krishna is doing the same thing. He is coming and he is bringing the dancing girls and the gopis and all of the his associates to put on this. He actually, it's a traveling road, just like in ISKCON we had our traveling road show back in 1973. That's how I came here to Boston. I came with the traveling road show. But so Krishna has his traveling road show, traveling all over the universes to show this wonderful pastimes. So he's the active, you can say, canvasser. The super soul in the heart is not really canvassing. He's playing a neutral role. That whatever you like, I will facilitate. You see, if you want to rob the house, all right. Here's how to rob the house. Of course, sometimes he makes an arrangement. There's one robber. The super soul gave him the intelligence, here's one house you can rob. So he went in that house, and he was casing out the joint, looking for something to steal. And then the house owner is pulling in the driveway. Oh, I guess it's time to go. He was a very cool-headed thief. He didn't freak out. He just, all right, now it's time to go the way I came in. But before I go, I must steal something. I've come, made all this trouble of breaking in, so I have to take something. So it was dark, so he just grabbed whatever he could find, and he went home with his booty. It turned out to be Bhagavad Gita as it is. So the super soul, even when he's giving intelligence how to rob the house, he's also sometimes facilitating according to the readiness of the thief. So he actually became a devotee, became a proper disciple, became a very pious Brahmin. Our god brother, what's his name? It'll come in a minute. But yes, very nice. Dutta Prabhu. Dutta.
The driver. Yeah.
Huh?
Huh?
Dutta,
the driver.
Yes, Dutta, yeah, that's right. Yeah. He personally told me the story. So the super soul gave him intelligence how to steal the house, but there was something else coming, some special mercy. So the Lord acts in many, many wonderful ways. He brings his pastimes to this world. He also brings his pastimes to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then he also enacts the most amazing pastimes of all, and that of course is Prabhupada Leela. That's the most amazing pastimes of all, Srila Prabhupada's pastimes. How he could come and grab all these people, the renegades of the Western culture. Many of us were in that category, and grab us and engage us in Lord Chaitanya's mission. So there's just innumerable pastimes going on, and those pastimes are still going on, actually. Every morning we sing Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasudhi Gaura Bhaktavinda. We offer obeisances to Panchatattva and also all the followers of Lord Chaitanya. So those persons who have given their life to serve the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Chaitanya is also acting his leelas through them as well. So many pastimes. We read all the reports of our book distributors, the amazing things that happen. We hear about devotees preaching in different parts of the world. We see what's happening in our own centers. So many amazing, if you really keep your eyes open and see what's going on, you realize that the amazing pastimes are still happening. They're happening right now, actually. The amazing pastimes of Krishna, the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Prabhupada's pastimes, we actually had an amazing experience several years ago at the Panihati Festival, and New Panihati Festival in Atlanta. It was in the noon arti. Like just getting ready, offering all the all the clay, hundreds and hundreds of clay pots filled with chip rice and yogurt, and decorated in so many ways by Jai Pataka Maharaj and his crew. And during the noon arti, it was Prabhupada. This was the murti of Prabhupada, similar to this one, one of these wonderful lifelike murtis of Prabhupada. And actually, it turned out it wasn't just a lifelike Prabhupada, it was living Prabhupada, because he actually started crying during the kirtan. Down his right eye, everyone could see, there were tears just rolling down his face. Prabhupada was actually showing us that he was present and he was deeply inspired by the kirtan that was going on. So the amazing pastimes are still happening. And all we have to do to get to really, you know, to absorb ourselves in these is to leave behind, as the old days in the West, check your guns at the door. You see, we have to check our false ego. We'll leave it with our shoes in the shoe rack. You know, false pride, leave it at the door. Put it in the shoe. We should have a special, along with the shoe rack, we should have a false ego rack, you see. Okay, put your shoes here and stick your false ego here. You know, leave it at the door. Don't bring it into the temple. You have to leave. If you have it when you come through the door, then leave it by the door where it belongs, not here inside the temple. So if we can do that, check our shoes and our false pride there at the door, then we can actually begin to experience what is this Krishna consciousness movement in a more deeper, deeper, and deeper, and deeper way. At the present time, we're just skimming the surface, actually. We're just skimming the surface of what is Krishna consciousness. Therefore, we're still feeling the modes of nature. Just like in an ocean, there are waves on the surface, up and down, up and down, up and down. But as you go deeper and deeper than that ocean, the influence of the waves becomes less and less and less. And finally you get deep enough where even there may be a hurricane happening on the surface of the ocean, you won't see even a trace of it. Even the most sensitive instrument will not be able to detect even a trace of that hurricane if you go deep enough in the ocean. So the closer we are to the surface, there's more and more turbulence. But the deeper we go into the depths of that ocean, then the turbulence gradually, gradually becomes completely conspicuous by its absence. And this ocean is actually unlimitedly deep. It's unlimitedly deep. Fathomless ocean. You see. Not only is the ocean of bhakti fathomless, but it's described, I forget which sage is being described in the third canto, the great fathomless sage also, that word is used for one devotee. I think it might be Maitreya Muni, I forget, but it's in the third canto. Describes him as the great fathomless sage. That means there's no bottom to the depth of his Krishna consciousness. And there's no end to his Krishna consciousness. It's fathomless. So we have to, while we're engaged in all of our activities of chanting, reading, cooking, cleaning, preaching, managing, collecting, distributing, etc., 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 basically activities that Prabhupada has given us to revolutionize the planet, you see. We have to also use those same activities to revolutionize our heart, to cleanse our heart more and more and more and more and more and more. And that means we're going deeper and deeper and deeper into Krishna consciousness. As Prabhupada points out in his purport in the Srimad Bhagavatam, describing Bahir Nasingo, Hridaye Nasingo, he gives very nice translation for this Bahir Nisinga Hridaya Nisinga. Bahir Nisinga Hridaya Nisinga. He says that, in this way we understand this prayer, that may Lord Nisringadev dwell within my heart, killing all my bad propensities. May my mind become clean so that I might peacefully worship the Lord and bring peace to the entire earth. So this is our mission, individually and collectively, in this movement. We want to purify our consciousness and spread that pure Krishna consciousness everywhere to everyone. That is our mission, individually and collectively. Prabhupada wrote us, wrote when actually we were in Dallas at the time, this was 1972, and one devotee had just moved from Dallas to associate with Prabhupada and the devotees in the new Australian Yatra. It was Australia became the most fortunate recipient of Srila Prabhupada's mercy. Prabhupada wrote made one comment that was written in a letter. Mahananda Prabhu wrote us a letter back to the Dallas temple where he had just been. He explained that Prabhupada had said that, he says, I have done 10 times more than my Guru Maharaj. Now you should do 10 times more than me. So I was recently speaking with one sannyasi and he said, well, that means collectively we should do 10 times more than Prabhupada. But I like to take it the other way, because then that's even a bigger number, see. If every single disciple of Prabhupada could make 100,000 disciples and figure there's 10,000 Prabhupada disciples, of course it's far less now, but the point is that if every Prabhupada disciple can do, as Prabhupada, if we take it in that way, that every Prabhupada disciple can do 10 times as much as Prabhupada did, he said, I've done 10 times more than my guru, now you do 10 times more than me. If we take it individually, then it becomes a much bigger, more exciting number than if we just collectively we do 10 times as much as Prabhupada did. Of course, we're not really the doers, we know that, we're just instruments. We can't actually do anything. Nothing. But all we can do is be instruments in the hands of Srila Prabhupada, our spiritual master, Lord Chaitanya, etc. Just as Krishna engaged Arjuna as his instrument for bringing success on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, you see, in this way. Krishna said, actually, they've all been killed by me. So actually, Prabhupada is actually delivering the whole world. But he wants us to come to the plate, as it were, and hit the ball on his behalf. It's described by Srila Prabhupada in the third canto that Krishna likes to see his devotee to be the hero of some episode of which Krishna himself is actually the doer. So the whole point is, the more we can become purified in our own consciousness, completely, absolutely, totally surrendered to Guru and Krishna, with every thought, every word, and every deed, in all times, all places, and all situations, to that extent we can be instruments for the previous acharyas using us to do wonderful things for the upliftment of the global consciousness. So the more that we become purified, the more they can use us as instruments to do that wonderful thing of inundating this planet with a overwhelmingly powerful tsunami of Krishna bhakti. Actually, that tsunami is coming from Mayapur, just inundating the entire universe in all directions. So if we can be agents for that tsunami of Chaitanya's mercy, that will be our greatest happiness in life. Every moment will be an exciting adventure. Every single moment. From the moment we wake up in the morning until the moment we take rest at night, every single moment will be the most exciting, inconceivable adventure. Why study history? Why not make history? You see? Why watch the news when you can be the news? You see? The news is actually, this karmic news is very boring. Why watch the news? Why just be the news? It's much more interesting to be the news than to watch it. It said there's three kinds of people. There's those who make things happen, those who watch things happen, and those who are so spaced out that they don't know what's going on, and finally they say, what happened? after the fact, you see. So the most exciting position is to be in the position of the devotee who makes things happen. Prabhupada said, I do not want sit-down Vaishnavas. I want fighting Vaishnavas like Hanuman and Arjuna. You see? So let us be in that position. Let us be propagators of Krishna Bhakti. Let us be preachers. Let us be gurus in the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to push forward this Krishna consciousness movement. That is the order of coming down. And then this will be our last lifetime in this material world. Or even if we do come back, it won't matter. But if we become pure devotees, totally absorbed at every second in serving Guru and Gauranga, then it won't matter. We won't have to think, well, I have to go back to Goloka Vrindavan so I can really taste the nectar. We will taste equal nectar right here in this material world. We will actually have experiences, adventures within this material world, which will be, if we come to that level of pure devotion, we will have adventures in this material world that are equally relishable as what's going on in Goloka Vrindavan right now, actually. Do you think a pure devotee doesn't relish serving Krishna wherever he may be? No, the relish is the same. The relish is the same. Wherever a pure devotee, that's how the pure devotee, wherever he goes. When Srila Prabhupada went anywhere, that place was transformed into Vrindavan. It doesn't matter where it was. Wherever Prabhupada was, that was Vrindavan. Because he's purely situated in Krishna consciousness. That is the standard he wants us to come to. He wants us to come to that standard of pure devotional service. Free of all anartas. Completely free of all anartas. Especially those who are taking the role of initiating spiritual master in our society. They especially have to strive for pure devotional service. Completely pure devotional service. With every thought, every word, and every deed. Because Prabhupada actually says that even though one can have a spiritual master who is Uttamadhikari, Majjhim, or even Kanishta, if the spiritual master is not an Uttamadhikari, then the disciples, they suffer under insufficient guidance. It's right there in the nectar of instruction. So, especially those who have taken the service of initiating gurus, we have to just really push ourselves very, very hard with every thought and every weed and every deed to get the weeds out, with every deed to get rid of the weeds. Every single deed to get rid of those weeds that are clouding the consciousness. It's our duty to our disciples to be absolutely spotlessly pure in all ways so this movement can be successful and the disciples can get the proper inspiration and guidance. So this is an exciting, ecstatic life, this Krishna consciousness movement. Indeed, movement is a very significant word. The opposite is something is either moving or it's static, it's stationary. Stationary or it's moving. So movement means ecstatic and stationary means static. So we keep this movement moving on. Keep it always moving forward. Individually we have to see that I'm moving forward every day closer and closer to Krishna. And collectively we have to see that as a spiritual family, a worldwide spiritual family, locally, zonally, nationally, continentally, internationally, globally, you see, we have to see that we are moving forward, that our movement is becoming stronger, more cohesive. We have to be a very tight-knit family, actually. Very strong relationships. Sometimes people say, what is the real ISKCON? The question is asked, what is the real ISKCON? ISKCON is actually not the buildings. It's not the GBC. It's one thing which is actually ISKCON, and that is the relationships we have with each other. The loving relationships between the devotees, that is actual ISKCON. It's a network of relationships centered around His Divine Grace, Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parivajakacharya Astatarasadashi Srimad, A.C. Bhakti Vedanta, Tridandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. That is actual discourse. So if we want this movement to be strong and successful, then that it will be successful to the degree that we have loving, trusting relationships with each other. So we're having difficulties getting along with other devotees, and we should take that as an exciting challenge to overcome those difficulties. Therefore, our mood should always be, my dear Prabhu, my dear God brother, my dear so-and-so, if I have in any way been offensive to you, please forgive me. We should always be in that mood. If in any way have I been offensive to you, please forgive me. Because we want to have very, very strong, pure relationships amongst ourselves, where there's no selfishness, no greed, no lust, no anger, just love, actually. As we hear from Rupa Goswami, there's these six loving exchanges. I remember how enlivened I was when I first got a hold of that book. It hadn't been published yet, but I got a hold of a Xerox copy of the manuscript before it had been published. I thought, this is really wonderful. We're supposed to love one another in this movement, not just, you know, compete with each other. You know, move up the ISKCON ladder by pushing the other Prabhus down, you see. We're supposed to love one another. We're supposed to have deep, loving relationships, and I thought that was really great. This is fantastic. Actually, it's not Maya to love your God brothers. You know, oh, that's some sentiment. You see. It's some stupid sentiment to love somebody, even a God brother, you know. It's Maya. No, Narottamdas is showing. Ramachandra Sangi Magi Narottamdas. I'm always hankering for that association of my beloved associate, Ramachandra Chakravarti. Each and every one of us should find our own Ramachandra Chakravarti within this movement, at least one, if not, you know, 10,000, 100,000. We should all have at least one Ramachandra Chakravarti, a dear God brother. You see, or the Manajis find a dear God sister. Everyone should have a dear God brother that they can open their heart up to, share realizations with. Krishna Katha Buddy, that you can just go on for hours talking about Krishna, hearing about Krishna, cleaning the temple together. Just a deep, loving relationship that you can spend hours and weeks together just serving and talking and preaching and hearing and embracing and offering obeisances, you see. This is what we need, strong, loving relationships, because those relationships don't exist in this material world. This material world, what they call love, is simply, it's L-U-S-T, it's simply lust. You see? I love you, I love you, I love you. Ah, come on. I lust after you, I lust after you, I lust after you. I'll scratch your back if you'll scratch mine. It's a business deal with someone. And when your senses no longer gratify my senses, then I don't care a fig about gratifying your senses. Sorry, divorce. So here we have a world where we can have genuine love. We have the spiritual world. Prabhupada has given us the spiritual world within this universe. The spiritual world is manifested as this kind. Sometimes people say, well, there's so many bad things in ISKCON, how could it be pure? We have to leave ISKCON and be Krishna conscious outside of ISKCON. But that's not true. ISKCON is never polluted. ISKCON is never contaminated. Is the Ganges ever contaminated? Prabhupada gives the example, there may be some stool floating down the Ganges. No, I will no longer bathe in the Ganges, I saw some stool floating in it. No, you just push it aside and take your bath. There may be a corpse floating down the Ganges. So, we've seen that sometimes in our ISKCON, some stool comes floating down the ISKCON River, or some corpse comes floating down the ISKCON River. Actually, many corpses and pieces of stool come floating down the ISKCON River. But the river is always pure. It is never contaminated, and it actually purifies one of all sin and actually makes one a pure devotee. So one should constantly bathe in the river of ISKCON. Even if there's sometimes stool floating, you just brush it. Get it out of your way and take your bath peacefully. And in this way, just as the it is coming from the spiritual world. This ISKCON river is flowing from the lotus feet of the divine grace Srila Prabhupada. And we get his mercy at every minute. We have Prabhupada's mercy showering on our heads at every minute, just by remaining within his society and loyally trying to make it successful. You see? Prabhupada told us, he said, even if you find it is intolerable, still you should not leave. Actually, he said there is nothing intolerable. But if you think it is intolerable, still you must not leave. And Prabhupada also told us that this ISKCON is his body. So, even if we say, oh, the ISKCON is now sick, it's disease condition, so I don't want to associate with it because I will also become diseased. Even if someone makes that argument, then we have to think, well, ISKCON is the body of Prabhupada. And if Prabhupada became sick, we would all run away. Oh, Prabhupada is sick. I don't want to get contaminated. Let me run far away from Prabhupada. He's sick. Of course not. The loving disciple, when the spiritual master is sick, he goes running to serve the spiritual master, to help him become, to nurse him back to health. So even if we think this movement is so diseased now, there's so many faults, there's so many problems, then we should be here too. We should be running, and we should be becoming very, very dedicated to rectify whatever is going wrong. Prabhupada actually told one Ramacharini, she left the temple and went home to mom. And she wrote Prabhupada a letter, and Prabhupada wrote her back. He said, if you feel that things is not being managed properly in the temple, you go back and you rectify. This is some Ramacharini. So we are, each one of us is responsible to see that this movement is going on nicely. Everyone is responsible. See that things are going on properly according to the standard given by Srila Prabhupada. Just like in Indian railways, Prabhupada said that they have one poster that is the duty of every employee to see that the wheel is turning. One employee is actually sitting in the locomotive and he's, you know, pulling the throttle to go out of the station. Another employee, he has to sign one paper to authorize the train to go out of the station. So both employees are seeing that the wheels on the train are turning. So it is the duty of every member of our society to see that this movement is going forward nicely. Not that I have to be told everything also. There's four kinds of servants of spiritual master. The fourth class servant, the spiritual master gives him an order, he refuses to do it. No, not going to do that, Gurudev. Mm-mm. Fourth class, you see. Third class, all right, I'll do it, but doesn't do it very well, he's not very enthusiastic, do it begrudgingly. All right, Gurudev, Guru Maharaj, I'll do it, but Second class, yes, Guru Maharaj, yes, Gurudev, whatever you say, does it enthusiastically, intelligently, expertly, in the second class. First class, he knows what to do even without being told. You see? He steps forward. He said, what does a spiritual master need? Let me do that. So this is the actual, we should all become first class. It's not the temple president has to tell me to do this. No, I can see what needs to be done. The toilet's dirty. It's sitting there dirty. The guests are coming to the temple this evening. Clean the toilet. Not that I just go sit in my room and take a nap. And then because no one told me to clean the toilet, I saw it, but no one told me to do it, so I'm all right, I'm pure devotee. I deserve a little rest. No. Something needs to be done, you step forward and do it, because it's Prabhupada always said, do the needful. So devotee can see what needs to be done, he steps forward enthusiastically to do it. You see, that is first class. So this is what we need in our society, that every single member of the society should become a first class disciple of Guru and Krishna. Whatever needs to be done, step forward and do. You see, active Vaishnavas. That is, one is, has that enthusiasm to do service. Then one is free of anxiety, actually. If you're thinking, oh, how can I get out of service? I can, you know, have a little enjoyment. Then there'll always be anxiety. But if you're thinking, where is service? Where is service? Where is service? Then you'll never be in anxiety. You'll always be ecstatic. Because I guarantee there will be unlimited opportunities for service. And simply be always eager. Where is it? Where is service? Where is service? Where is service? And you will be the happiest devotee. There'll be no devotee with a bigger smile on his face than you. And it won't be a silly grin also. You'll become very wise. You'll be very sober also. You'll develop deep, deep, deep sobriety. You will actually relish the ever-increasing nava-nava-rasa, ever-increasing sweetness in your relationship with your spiritual master, with Srila Prabhupada, with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, with all the acharyas, and ultimately with Sri Sri Radha Gopi Janapala. So you will experience, if you're very, very serious, to always be in that service mood. There's no limit to how much nectar you can experience at every minute. Do you realize that one pure utterance of Krishna contains so much nectar within it that the entire universe cannot contain that nectar? Just imagine a gulab jamun that, you know, it can't contain the sugar juice and just oozing out in all directions. So this universe, because of the recent appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the recent appearance of Srila Prabhupada, this universe is actually oozing with unlimited nectar. It must be seeping through the coverings. Because Prabhupada, every pure utterance of Krishna from the lips of Prabhupada contained more nectar than this universe could hold, actually. So we can just imagine how much nectar is actually pervading every square inch of Boston right now. Where Prabhupada first set foot on American soil in Commonwealth Pier on September 17th, 1965. This Boston is oozing with unlimited nectar of Prabhupada's Leela. Prabhupada's, see how many times he came here, and he came to MIT and lectured such amazing pastimes of Srila Prabhupada here in Boston. So how do we tap into that nectar? We just have to be in the mood of pure devotional service. And then we will taste the sweetest nectar at every minute. Every minute we'll be diving deep into that unlimited ocean. Krishna Prem. So anyway, we thank you very much. Does anyone have any questions or would like to make some comment, transcendental comment? Yes, Maharaj.
Can I tell a story?
Huh? Okay.
I'm
not hearing you anymore. Go ahead.
Meet the rabbi, talk to him and find out what he has for us, some advice on how we can improve our monastery. I heard he's very knowledgeable and very successful, very respected rabbi. Okay, so the abbot, he decided to go, so he went to rabbi, and they came, and were talking, strange and wonderful, loving relationships, were laughing together, and smiling, and just having a good time. And then the abbot said, you know, I have one question for you. You know, and he was explaining how the monastery was so successful, and then after so many years, things had just gone down. Can you tell me what we can do to again bring it back to that wonderful atmosphere we had? And the rabbi said, you know, I don't really know what to tell you, but I can tell you one thing, and this I know for sure, one of those brothers that is presently in the monastery, he's the Messiah. He's the Messiah. Special. So he said, well, which one? She said, I don't know, but I know one of the brothers is there. So he went back after some time, came back, and then the brothers came and he said, what did he say? Well, he gave us some solution, how we can improve. He said, not really, but he did say one of you is the Messiah. Well, which one? He didn't say. So then they all became a little concerned. And we're thinking about it. Well, you know, Brother Josh, he's excellent. He gets angry, but still, he's always right. And Brother Mark, you know, he sleeps a lot, but still, he works hard. You know, he's starting to see the good qualities, the good qualities amongst the faults. And then they started seeing each other's good qualities. Then they decided, well, just to be careful, we should, you know, serve each other. So each one had the idea to serve the other because they didn't know which one was the other. The rabbi was the Messiah. So this went on for some time. They were serving each other, so nice things developed. Wonderful, loving relationships. And gradually, people started coming back. And then more brothers came, started to join in. The monastery started to pick up, and so many things were happening. Again, it became successful. So that's the story.
So which one was the Messiah? Did I ever find out? they all became Messiahs.
Yeah, maybe it was no one. It was the rabbi's way of getting them to appreciate each other's successes. I think that would be understanding. So we sometimes, many times we see faults, but we should also see the good qualities. Actually, the devotee is an honor. Always looks for the good qualities of others and magnifies them. Not only sees them, but magnifies them. Then we develop a sense of appreciation for the association we have. And at the same time, it enthusiasm to want to serve.
Thank you, Maharaj, for that wonderful, enlivening, enlightening story. Prabhupada, he further explains in this point that you were making, Maharaj, that he compares the fault-finding person to the fly. He just wants to go for the sowers, and the one who looks for the good, he is the honeybee. So this is a devotee. He's like the honeybee. Even though we all have a combination of good and bad qualities, we should always try to see, and as you pointed out, magnify. Remember Tamal Krishna Maharaj, right after Prabhupada's departure, he was saying how one should, you find this, how he was saying how Prabhupada had the art of seeing the spark of bhakti in the heart and fanning it to a blazing fire. So this is the key. We have to appreciate whatever is good there and encourage that good in each other. And then we'll all become messiahs, actually. Prabhupada said like that, how one time he was saying like that, how the preacher of Krishna consciousness, that is the meaning of messiah, one who can save others. So actually we're meant to be a whole movement of messiahs who can help people to get out of their entanglement in material existence and become purified in their consciousness, develop love for God. So,
actually, devotees have good qualities. We just have to just try to look for them. But they're there.
Absolutely.
The fact that someone is a devotee, that is the number one good quality. They have given their life for, trying to give their life for Krishna consciousness, that is an outstanding quality.
Actually, the devotees, they are sadhus. They're all, anyone who's come to give his life for Krishna, they are sadhu, and the Chaitanya Charitamrita tells us sarva sadhu sanga sadhu sanga sarva shastre koi lava matra sadhu sanga sarva siddhi hoy. All the scriptures declare that the even one lava matra, 1/11th of a second of association with a saintly devotee, the sadhu, can give all perfection. So just imagine what opportunity we have in ISKCON to associate with sadhus. Even 1 moment's association can give all perfection. What to speak of 1 minute, 1 hour, 1 day, 1 week, or 1 lifetime in the association of the sadhus. How blessed we are, how fortunate we are to have sadhu sangha. We should never forget. We should always feel that I am so fallen, rascal, I don't deserve to be in this movement. But these devotees are tolerating my unlimited offenses and allowing me and blessing me with their mercy. That's how we should always feel. We don't deserve to be here, but we're being blessed by this sadhu sangha, the ISKCON sadhu sangha. Any other stories?
Any questions? Pita Maharaj always says that one should relate with the devotees as if that exchange would determine one's spiritual development, and it does.
In other words, the way I deal with you, whether I go back to Godhead or not, depends on how I relate with you.
Yes,
that's right. That's absolutely correct. We should, and whenever we blow, we should just be very apologetic. You know, when we get something comes in the way and we make a mistake, we should just beg forgiveness. And that's right. We should take every single devotee as if my relation, and it's a fact actually, if there is one devotee that we have offended and we did not make proper amends, and that will keep us in this material world. I was singing this morning when I was bowing down before going to time that you can't beg Krishna to purify you of the offenses you committed against Vaishnavas. It's not possible. But so I prayed to them, I said, please give me the intelligence to know how to rectify whatever offenses I've committed against Vaishnavas. That's what I asked them, and I bowed down to them today. Please bless me with the ability to rectify whatever offenses I've made against Vaishnavas. I can't beg you to relieve me of that. I have to beg you for the intelligence that how to deal properly with the devotees so I can become free from whatever offenses I've committed to Vaishnavas. So that's an excellent point, Prabhu. Question?
The point was made that we should not see the fault, but there has to be someone to see and correct someone also. Mm. Otherwise, it becomes too late. And we have seen that side also in our movement. We glorify the good qualities and magnify it, but then at the same time, the wrongs we don't see.
Yes, that is actually the duty of those who are the senior devotees, have a responsibility to not only appreciate the good in their juniors, but to also to point out the faults of the juniors so they can overcome. Actually, the father or the guru who doesn't point out the faults in his subordinate is actually the enemy. That is kindness. If we actually, but the point is, it has to be done in a mood of compassion, not in a holier than thou spirit. The difficulty is our tendency is to do that in a holier than thou attitude. That's our very, very strong, strong tendency. So if we actually sincerely understand that another one of the devotees is acting in a way which is not proper, we have to very, very, very carefully, and with all humility and genuine and loving intentions, you see, we have to, in this way, either directly or speak to them or speak to someone else who's in position to directly speak to them.
Sometimes the strong medicine is also,
huh?
Sometimes the strong medicine is
Yes, and one has to be a qualified doctor, though, to give a strong medicine. You have to, you can't, an ordinary citizen cannot give strong medicine. You have to be a qualified doctor. So that's why we have senior devotees in our movement, like the sannyasis, initiating gurus, GBCs, temple presidents, you see, because they're understood to have the intelligence and the training. And also it applies to any senior devotees as well. Any senior devotees who've actually, you know, matured in their Krishna consciousness, they can give correction. That's a fact. They don't, you don't have to have an official position. You simply have to be mature in your Krishna consciousness. But we have designated certain people. Prabhupada set up certain designated leaders who were expected to have that maturity, that we were expected to take correction from them. He said, even while he was here, he said the GBCs are siksha gurus. You see. So in this way, we do have those persons who are seniors and we meant to take training, and we're actually a devotee who will be glad to take correction from anyone. If one is actually a humble Vaishnava, anyone points out my faults, then I'm very appreciative. It could be even someone who's not initiated, it doesn't matter. A wise man, he will accept gold even from a filthy place. So a devotee is willing to be corrected from any corner. Even Prabhupada took advice from people. When he was distributing his magazine, something was a librarian said, if you publish books, then that will be more appreciated than a magazine which they may throw away. So Prabhupada took it, yes. He took it as divine instruction coming through an ordinary person. So we have to learn how to appreciate how Krishna can communicate with us. Yes, Maharaj.
It's a very difficult point to really come to a clear conclusion, because we set ourselves up as correctors of our others, then we really can't become Krishna conscious. Because a devotee is meant to be dosha darshi, doesn't see the faults in others. If you actually see the faults in others, then really a lot of times they're just reflections of your own faults. Now, if someone is behaving improperly, that's one thing, against the standards.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's improper behavior which disturbs the proper mood within the temple. And then in a very, what we say, concerned way, not only for the atmosphere, but for that person, as you were pointing out, there has to be concern. If there's false ego or anger or holier than thou, then that mood will be caught rather than concern. Like, they don't hear the words, they hear the mood. And then what happens is then there's a block. The defense mechanism comes up. And when people, then really, it just makes the situation, what we say, worse. So when we correct someone, we have to actually be concerned with that person in a Krishna conscious way. And not because they're disturbing me, therefore I should correct them to stop their disturbance.
The mood has to be, for such correction to actually be effective, it has to be in a mood of pure loving service.
Yeah, you see how karmis deal with each other. They just kind of like abuse each other, the way they, even they're within their friendships. Devotees can't act like that, because it's a very sweet and a very loving relationship amongst devotees. It has to be there. That's the mood of devotion that's necessary in order to execute Krishna consciousness properly. We study the lives of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees. It's always very sweet and loving. There was some joking, and there's always differences of opinion, but that always that loving relationship is the mood that is the basis for all other, what we say, moods that may have developed within that relationship.
Actually,
if that's not there, then we just create walls between each other.
I was just trying to figure it out. When a younger devotee sees a devotee in a leadership position, for instance, breaking the principle.
Oh, okay.
So are we supposed to say something or not? When they just say, oh, he's a great guy.
I would say that if someone is superior and they're committing a mistake or some offense, the best way to deal with that is to go to someone who is on the equal level with that person and explain to them, and then they can tell them.
That becomes a big father error also.
Otherwise, you know, that person might think, well, why are you criticizing me?
There has to be someone to correct those mistakes.
Yeah,
obviously. That's why Prabhupada has created the watchdogs. He called the watchdogs of ISKCON, GBC. It's their duty to play that role of being, you know, barking when an intruder comes. If there's something inauspicious, if the personality of Kali is manifesting in the behavior of anyone within our society on any level, then Prabhupada established GBC as barking, as watchdog. Watchdog means protect from intruder. So we do have a responsibility to see that that is not there. And so we have to go through that mechanism which is given by Prabhupada. It's already there. Prabhupada perfectly arranged everything so we can deal with anything that may come. We have the perfect mechanism, this Krishna consciousness movement. We have a house actually in which the whole world can live peacefully. So we have to master the art of keeping wonderful, peaceful, loving relationships, even dealing with things like we've seen that have come down the tubes since Prabhupada left, dealing with them in a Krishna conscious way so the family can stay together. The most important thing is the family stays together.
Sometimes it becomes too late also.
If one is sincere, then Krishna will give all intelligence. Krishna will give all intelligence how everything can go on very nicely, how one can properly deal with whatever may come along the pathway of devotion. If one is simply sincere and always in that mood of love for Krishna, Krishna will give all intelligence. There's no difficulty. The only problem we really have is our lack of Krishna consciousness, as Prabhupada, as I explained yesterday. That's only the really difficulty we face, is our lack of Krishna consciousness. Jai. So we thank you all very much for your wonderful kindness upon us, allowing us to set foot in this temple in spite of our unlimited offenses. We pray that whatever offenses we may have committed, you will kindly forgive us and allow us once again the sweet shelter of your Sangha. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.